Welcome, everybody, to episode 351 of WordPress Weekly for Wednesday, May 8th, 2019. I'm your host, Jeff Chandler, joined by John James Jacoby. Hello, John.
Hello, Jeff. This should be like episode 360-something, but we've missed so many weeks now, Jeff. I mean...
Yeah, there's explanations for that, which I've talked to you about off the air. I've talked to some other people off the air. And by the way, thank you to some of the listeners and some of the readers out there who have written in and asked if I'm okay. Truth be told, I'm not going to dive into it this week. I don't feel we've got too much to get into today. But next week, John, I'm going to dedicate the show to talking about where I've been, what I've been going through, and kind of what I expect to be doing in the near future.
I think that's a good idea, because it isn't very often that I get to make you feel awkward on the show, and so that's an opportunity for the show to get a little meta and for us to talk about what you've been thinking about.
But apologies to the listeners out there. I'm trying to get back on the saddle here, and hopefully this is the beginning of some awesome things in the future. And if all goes well, which it should, you'll be hearing a lot more from me, not only on this show but on other podcasts that I'm gonna start up, which I'll get all into that next Wednesday. But for now, today, our focus is on a pretty important piece of work, the Gutenberg Accessibility Audit that was produced by Tenure, I believe is the name. And on the show today, we have Rachel Cherry, who is the Senior Software Engineer for Disney Interactive and the Director of WP Campus. Happy belated birthday, by the way. See, I'm going to say it in public on the show, so it's on the record. take notes for me, John. And Brian DeConnick, who is a front-end designer, developer, and mathematics enthusiast. He builds stuff on WordPress for NC State with the NC State Office of Information Technology. Thank you both, Rachel and Brian, for being on the show today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So I was thinking about, I've gone through a bit of the document, and we'll get into some of the results, but let's sort of set this up in... I want to go back to December, but I think it kind of goes back before then, during the development stages of Gutenberg. And I remember the accessibility team and accessibility advocates such as yourself and Morten Rand Hendrickson in GitHub issues routinely describing and saying that there were a lot of things that concerned you regarding the accessibility of Gutenberg. And we even reached a point where it seemed like the sort of the accessibility of Gutenberg was either what was like perhaps a step back from the classic editor, and that there was a concern of releasing this out into the wild to the all the higher ed education centers would end up upgrading to WordPress and have this thing that potentially would be less accessible than what they already had. So I don't know, kind of describe sort of the processes that led up to the even the idea of having an audit done on Gutenberg.
So yeah, there were a lot of conversations happening, a lot of discussions being had, and I will also like to point out the accessibility team itself even came out and said, you know, Gutenberg is not accessible, and we can't really recommend that anyone that relies on assistive technology use Gutenberg. And so there were obviously a lot of issues and heated conversations and frustrations. And so we were following along closely, we being WP Campus, because we as higher education institutions actually have to be accessible by law. If you receive any kind of federal funding, you fall under Section 508, where you are required by law to reach a certain level of accessibility. It's not exactly WCAG 2.0AA, but it's very close to that. And so we're following along closely because it's not a matter of must be, or it's not a matter of nice to be accessible, it's a matter of it must be accessible. And so there were some discussions, we were watching some threads. There was it seemed like Automatic might do an audit, and then they changed their minds. And so we were having a community meeting one day, and someone threw out the idea, why don't we do it? And so we said, sure, why not? And Brian here volunteered.
Yeah, that was a huge mistake.
No, it was amazing. Brian's managed all this super, he's kicked butt. So we put together an RFP, and I was just pulling up our timeline. That was October 24th is when we announced the RFP.
Wow.
So we put that out there. We got 7 responses and they were all amazing. We put together a selection committee and we picked 10. And so we announced that in December. We started fundraising because we knew it was going to cost about $31,000. And about $10,000 was raised by the general WordPress community. And then like 2 days before WordCamp US, Automattic stepped in and said that they would pledge to make sure that the entire audit was funded. So basically whatever the community didn't raise, they would pay for the rest. So that was an exciting day. And so we were fully funded and so we moved forward. And they started testing in January. I don't remember the exact date, like early January. And so that there was a long, you know, kind of 2-3 months there of waiting for the testing to finish. And then we announced the results last week. So that's kind of an overview of the timeline.
And I remember as we were covering the accessibility issues on the Tavern, and I remember, I think I even tweeted this out that, well, we have the team, the Matt Mulloway and the people working on Gutenberg saying they've made these huge strides in accessibility and that it's Gutenberg's probably, if not on par, if not more accessible than the classic editor. And then we have the accessibility advocates that are saying, oh, no, it's less accessible than the classic editor. And I'm like, well, I don't really know much about accessibility. Who do I believe? The only way that this is going to get settled is if somehow, some way, an audit, a detailed audit, is done on Gutenberg, and that way, let's everybody, including me, you know, Joe Schmo, can see, you know, just how accessible this editor is. And as it turns out, the accessibility advocates have many legs to stand on based on the results of this report.
Well, I think something important to take away is these audits should be done on any project, especially one of this scale. You're talking about a complex application that's going to be used by, like, what numbers do we use now? Like 32 or 33% of the web. And you need these audits. You need some, no matter if you've done all kinds of accessibility testing on your own, it's important to have these audits. These audits go, like, the complexity and the intensity that they do and provide, like the user testing, like actually having humans sit down and test it. They do automated like technical testing as well, but they do. And if you've read even like a small percentage of the report, you realize that they were incredibly thorough. Mm-hmm. And the depth of knowledge that we now have about not just Gutenberg, but how to make accessible apps in general, whether or not you are working in WordPress or, you know, some handmade proprietary thing or Drupal or whatever, like anyone could read this thing and help move the web forward as far as accessibility is concerned. So it's really exciting and it's fascinating to read.
So Brian, as you were putting this all together, sort of describe that process on coming up with this criteria of what you were looking for in RFP and why 10 was chosen.
Yeah, so this was the first RFP that I've ever written, which was an adventure in and of itself. And I think I have seen other RFPs more recently than that, just from some other processes I've been involved in on campus here. And I'm regretting some of the choices I made in my prose. But, you know, it all turned out okay. So first and foremost, we wanted to end up with a report that would be useful for the WP campus, the institutions that have people participating in the WP campus organization. You know, there was a lot of contradictory information. You were mentioning that earlier, and you know, it's hard at an institutional level to make choices and plan when the information that's available comes in the form of tweets and blog posts and angry comments and things like that. So the first and foremost, we wanted a report that would be able to give us an assessment of the editing experience, an assessment of the markup that comes out of the editor, and just sort of give us some guidance at the institution level for what are the questions we need to be paying attention to when we decide, should we upgrade? Is it okay to upgrade for some websites but not others based on who the users are, things like that. So beyond just the higher ed community, then the next step is what kind of report is going to have the greatest value to the whole WordPress community. Rachel was speaking to this just a moment ago. We ended up with 10 and we ended up with something that is and just a wealth of information, something that I think anybody who's not a deeply knowledgeable accessibility specialist can learn something from this report. And that's something that we were hoping for, that's something that we were looking for in the RFP process, is a vendor that would be able to give the kind of information that the community needs to learn about accessibility and get excited about accessibility. Rachel mentioned we had a lot of really great proposals that we received. Tenon was, I think, a really great fit for us organizationally, also in terms of the price. It turns out accessibility audits can get kind of expensive, but any one of the other organizations that submitted RFPs, I think, would have done a fantastic job too. This was the smoothest and best process I think we could have hoped for.
And Tenon provided WP Campus with a 34-page executive summary, their testing plan, which groups of features are the editor and the testing components, a 329-page long-form technical report, which to me is my favorite thing, describing the logged issues in detail, a summary document describing Tenon's usability testing, a CSV file containing the issues logged during the technical audit, and even a guide to importing the CSV file into issue tracking tools. And then there's also a collection of issues that they discovered on GitHub. Now, this is a very comprehensive, is an understatement. This is a very detailed document, and it would be very tough to cover everything in a one-hour audio-based podcast. But I'll start with Rachel. What are some of the things you learned from this report?
Okay, so I did take tons of notes. I spent most of my weekend reading every single page, and it was really cool. Even I learned a few things, and I do a lot of accessibility work. We can get super technical here, but...
Well, before you do that, I also want to say thank you to you or whoever was responsible in writing the post announcing this report, because I like how at the bottom of the post there is recommendations for site administrators, general WordPress users, core contributors, web developers, higher education institutions that use WordPress, and basically advise not to use the report as gospel or for the basis of a certain ideology or what have you, that just take the information for what it is and then base your conclusions off of that. And I thought it was a great way to introduce this report to the wider community.
Brian is really great at writing our blog posts. I'm going to pat Brian on the back.
You're going to make me blush, Rachel. I do think it's important that, I think Rachel and I don't want the responsibility of telling people this is what you should do or shouldn't do. I think it's great that we get the opportunity to share information, but... that's all I'm comfortable doing.
that's all we really could do, especially for like higher ed institutions. Like, we can't tell you whether or not to use it, but we can give you the facts, and then that's kind of up to you and your disability services office and your legal team. So, yeah, Brian did a great job.
So, all right, let's go into it. Let me first ask the obvious question: is Gutenberg accessible? The version of Gutenberg that they tested, is it accessible? And I guess that's a loaded question, because what are we using to base that? Is it WCAG, level A, two level A's? Maybe that's the wrong question to ask, but because based on the document, there's a lot of issues with Gutenberg accessibility.
Well, funny you say that. Actually, something that Tenon points out in the report that I appreciated is that we really shouldn't think of accessibility in the different like levels of WCAG. Like, basically any issue is an issue. So even if it's like level A, which visually or I guess kind of mentally you think is the bottom of the lowest stack of issues, like we shouldn't think of it that way. We should just think of them all as issues. And so to answer your question, no, it's not accessible. And the report makes that pretty clear. They break down the, the system usability scale. And they talk about the user testing and they tell you how they broke everything down into three tasks. And there are basically of the three tests and the different testing they did, which was create new content, edit content, and amend the post options, which means like changing like the post date and the post status and things like that, like metadata. In all three tasks, there were scenarios where they couldn't even complete them. So it's like, it's not even a scenario where they just struggle and it takes them a lot longer than say it would take me to do it. They couldn't do it at all. They could not even complete the task. So I think they were saying overall, and I'm taking this out of the report, overall 6 of 9 participants completed task one, so 3 didn't. 7 of the 9 completed task 2, and only 4 of 9 completed task 3. And so basically it placed the average across all test participants placed Gutenberg squarely in the first quartile described as, quote, not acceptable. And then I think I'm trying to find the line where it says,
I have too
many notes, but you can read it in the report. But basically, yes, it's not accessible, and there were some pretty severe issues.
They talk about how the scores within the UX user experience report indicate that Gutenberg can be described at best as poor to okay, based on their criteria that they logged. To kind of look at, and they describe the process and what they discovered. But I think really the bread and butter of this report to me is a 329-page long-form technical report where they outline every issue that they discovered, the level of, I guess, severity or some type of priority they logged it. And they also provided illustrations, an explanation as to why it's an issue. And then they even provided code or a remediation process for this, which I thought was awesome. So I don't know much about accessibility. So I browsed through this document and basically my conclusion was that there is a lot of room for improvement, but if even half or two thirds or if everything that they was improved based on the remediation suggestions, that not only would it be more accessible, but the darn thing would be a lot more usable to me who doesn't have any impairments. It'd just be a much better product to use.
Yeah. Our accessibility coordinator here at NC State, Crystal Tienen, she likes to tell people when she talks about this that accessibility and usability are best friends. You know, they go together at every step of the way. Everything you do to make a more accessible experience makes things better for everybody.
And for instance, a lot of things dealt with contrast, using the wrong colors, shades, and there are even instances where certain bits of functionality were not even available to those who use assistive technologies or on the keyboard. It really is a fascinating look into sort of the nuances of how Gutenberg actually works and how much maybe a lot of us take for granted.
Yeah, if you can use a mouse, I think, and myself included, we do take a lot of things for granted. Like if developers would simply test their designs and their developments without a mouse, when there is every step of their building, every step of building their project, we would see a lot. I think we would see a lot more empathy and better user experiences. A lot of us don't test by keyboard alone, or also testing with a screen reader, even if it's just basic, like the one that comes with your Mac. That's something like that will take you a lot of the way, just realizing what elements you have that cannot be read aloud by a screen reader. That is also as a big common issue. And then you have things like you already mentioned, like there's a lot of color contrast issues. There's a lot of color contrast issues in Gutenberg. There's a lot of really light gray text on top of white that fixing that will make a big difference to people with low vision, color blindness. And there were a lot of issues with people that have low vision zoom in. And so there were a fair amount of issues where either you would zoom in and you would trigger mobile styles, which apparently on the mobile being, you know, just small screen of Gutenberg, it hides a lot of things. It hides a lot of the toolbars and buttons. So you literally can't do a lot of stuff if you have to zoom in. And then the other kind of related to that was if people don't necessarily zoom in, but they increase the font size, there's a lot of fixed widths and heights in Gutenberg on buttons. And so when you zoom in and the text gets bigger, it would get cut off by the fixed container. And so you couldn't read text, you couldn't see things. So these are things that make a huge difference that kind of low on the amount of time to fix scale. These are things don't necessarily involve huge amounts of work, but you do have to kind of tweak your design a little bit. But those will be really easy fixes that will make huge differences. There were a couple state change management issues. For example, if you click a button with a keyboard, you know, you have keyboard focus and something else happens and then, excuse me, you lose the focus or it goes back to the top of the page. So then that person with their keyboard then has to tab back down to find that spot on the page where they were. And that's not something that's going to keep you from completing a task, but that is super frustrating. It's not a great user experience. And there was a few examples of keyboard trap too. There were a fair amount of screen reader issues too. One example that I thought was interesting was the document panel. It's a really great example to show people about things to keep in mind. They had the document panel with all these facts and stuff, but if you're listening to that with a screen reader, it's not really clear what that information is. You know, there's just numbers and words being read out to you. And so having ARIA labels in there to help screen reader people, users, know what they're hearing.
I thought drag and drop functionality unavailable to keyboard or touchscreen blew my mind. it is a block-based editor where the whole point is to be able to move blocks around in your document is not available to folks that need to use a keyboard or that are using a touchscreen device. Yeah. I will again commend Brian for the blog post because there were a few sentences that I'd like to pull out of this that I feel like are sad that need to be written, but that are super, super important when it comes to a document like this. These findings should not be used as fodder for out of context quotes on social media or in blog comments. Please refrain from using this report as a means to attack others. And I'll follow it up with my favorite. Please use this report as what it is intended to be, constructive feedback in support of the WordPress project. Those things for a report like this, I think are really, really super important because frankly, this report is scathing. The things that are wrong with Gutenberg shouldn't have been things that were wrong with it because these are, like you said, Rachel, relatively easy to fix things. They are not things that are fundamentally flawed with the way that Gutenberg works. These are problems that can be fixed, but that they were ignored for lack of time, deprioritized and behind other things. There's 114 issues that were opened here, which, and you look at the number of issues in the Gutenberg repo is single digit percentages of new issues opened here. And so it's actually not that bad in the whole big picture of the enormity of what Gutenberg was. But some of these are things that shouldn't have made it into a production ready piece of software. And so it's important for everyone that reads this report to see it as it being constructive and positive and only reinforcing the things that everybody kind of was trying to point at and knew to be true. The drag and drop thing though, blew my mind when I read the details on that one.
Yeah, most At the end, ultimately, there are some like big picture accessibility issues with Gutenberg that can't be really put into a GitHub issue that I know people are still talking about. I know the accessibility team is still talking about. They're trying to like figure out a way to like explain it. But there are some high level like cognitive load issues with Gutenberg. It is a very complex app that there are some design considerations and how it's used that need to be considered and possibly revamped. But like those are hard to like put into actionable, you know, tangible remediation at this point. So I know that they'll keep that conversation moving, but we were really excited. There was I'm pretty sure it was one of our requirements. Brian can tell me if I'm wrong, but that whoever our vendor was, that they actually make the issues in GitHub. So that way there can be some immediate tangible like remediation that can be done. So like if we go through and we knock out all of these, all the 90 issues that Carl submitted, that will take Gutenberg way, like it will move it way forward. Mm-hmm. There's still some work to do, but it will make a huge impact. And so that's like super exciting. And I was super grateful. Brian put that text in the blog post, and it was, we had someone that was reading it kind of comment that it sucks that we have to include such language, but we're at that point, you know, and we didn't do this audit because, you know, to prove anyone, you know, right or wrong, or to, you know, point out somebody messed up or was wrong. That's not the point of all this. And that's not what we want it to be used as to like, we don't want to, it's important to like remember what happened in the sense to learn from it and move forward so that next time, you know, we can take care of this stuff before we release. Next time we're thinking of these issues while we're building something and, you know, instead of having to go back and change the way it was built. And I was just going to say a lot of accessibility. When you have issues, it's, you know, most of the time when I come across stuff, it's just people didn't know. And so the more we can educate and advocate, you know, the more we can, you know, push the web forward a little bit. And we hope people look at this report as education so that when going forward, when they are building things, they're building the next, you know, major change to WordPress, or they're building, you know, the next, you know, super innovative theme for WordPress or any other project. Doesn't even have to be a WordPress project. You know, now they have this information in their repertoire repository, and they can use that going forward. So it is a step forward, you know, for kind of like the web in general, even if, you know, nothing were. So yeah, we're really excited about it.
No, so we can edit that post to say, do not use this on the Tavern for Fodder, Job.
Well, there goes that idea, Job.
That's all I was thinking when I was reading that post.
Jeff was like, wow. Just firing up the keyboard.
He was thinking of me when he wrote that.
So I guess my question for Brian would be, in writing your RFPs, was part of that requesting or knowing that the results would be open? I mean, I don't know if they're licensed as anything, but you included the PDF, all of the documents, the CSV. You basically, looks like you've included everything open, like for everyone to see. Was that part of your RFP, or were they was that built into this?
So that was part of the RFP. We asked, basically, I forget exactly how we worded it, but the more that we can share with people, the better. There are some accessibility companies that will have proprietary resources for some of their learning modules and things like that. And the fact that Tenon was in their response to the RFP, they said they were good with sharing everything. And then also, I'll go ahead and plug right now, next Monday at noon Central Time, 1 Eastern Time, Tenon is hosting an open public webinar to talk about the results. So go to wpcampus.org to sign up for that. But the fact that Tenon was ready to just have us put it all out there was absolutely a plus. And I think, you know, there was some talk about where things were 6 months ago, or, you know, in the fall when there was a lot of frustration expressed around accessibility in Gutenberg. And Rachel and I were both active on Twitter and expressing some of our feelings, as were plenty of other people. I think everybody, there's a natural reaction when the work that you're doing is challenged to push back. And there's a natural reaction when you work in the accessibility world and you feel like you're ignored to push a little harder. The fact that we're able to offer all of this information just as a statement of fact, a statement of the findings that this independent organization found, and frame it in a way that's constructive. I think there's always going to be a little bit of friction, some ruffled feathers here and there, but we can do our part to try to make it as constructive a process as possible.
Yep, I agree. I mean, I really felt like this audit checked all of the partially inaccessible boxes for what we would be looking for as a community for audits like this happen a million times a day in other areas of the world. Like I think when we talk about accessibility, we have a tendency to really focus on the web, but the accessibility audits happen in your village, town, or city dozens a day. Putting in new curbs and gutters, and they need to be angled a certain way. They need to be pointing in a certain direction. They need to be certain widths in order to accommodate wheelchairs, people with crutches, two-way traffic, things like that. Like, these types of audits are not unusual. They are, frankly, are just new to us. I mean, in here, anyways, not new to the web, certainly, or bigger companies that can afford to have these type of audits, or that need to have these kind of audits, but. This is the reason why I asked about this being built into the RFP, is because I think it's really important that the results of this are open, so that other people from other projects can, one, like, understand kind of what the expectations are, but two, like, see what type of audits other that the world is generally used to seeing and receiving. I don't care if it's a new sidewalk or you're painting a water tower or you're putting in roads or infrastructure, like, these audits are not only normal, but frankly, usually necessary to get insurance on things. Like, you need to be able to prove that, like, your thing is accessible and kind of up to par with what the current understanding and standards are. And without that, you really don't have a leg to stand on. Like, you are responsible for the sort of poor results of your thing. Like, it really is sort of important, but also, like, really, the right thing for all of this stuff to be open the way that it is. It's really important.
And speaking of openness, is anything licensed in a way, or is it 100% open to where, let's say, I take some screenshots from the technical document of issues, and I take them to a meetup group, or even turn it into a WordCamp presentation about accessibility? Does anything prevent anyone from doing that?
I don't think so.
Okay,
no.
Good.
No one's asked me that before, but I was
just thinking that what you learn in the illustrations from the technical document would make an awesome thing to show off to talk about accessibility at WordPress meetups, or even if somebody wanted to whip up something about basic accessibility issues or guidelines and kind of the WordPress question. with the
PDF. Might be a good question for the webinar on Monday. WP Campus is doing their thing, because frankly, being able to take snippets out of this and use this as a learning tool, it would be nice to be able to either say this, the results of this are GPL or Creative Commons or whatever they are, right? Like, at that point, you know who to attribute, and that's a lot of the reason why audits like this usually are kept private, or the pieces of them are proprietary. Is because they don't want the results of their work just instantly being reused and recycled for free. You know, they want to be able to protect the work that they've done, And so I think seeing this as open as it is really refreshing, because a lot of the times you don't see it. Like usually there's pieces of it that are redacted or proprietary or hidden. So,
and Rachel, as you describe in this document, that you know a lot of the accessibility issues are the result of devs not using or using invalid, not semantic markup, whether it's not using the HTML spec correctly or it's removing default styles in these settings exist for a reason. So it really is just getting back to basics.
Yeah. Anyone that does any kind of accessibility, like work, education, advocacy, like a lot of the problems that are pretty much caused by people not using HTML spec correctly. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, websites and accessibility API and assistive technologies, you know, they're built to work off of the HTML spec. And so when it's used incorrectly, that's what causes a lot of problems. The DOM, the object model that we all use to build websites, it's not set up correctly, or you know, certain elements are used for certain reasons, and when they're used for other reasons, those elements don't communicate correctly with technologies. You know, for example, there's at least one instance of this in the report where there is an A element that is used to trigger like a JavaScript action. And A elements should only be used to go to new pages. Like an A element's not valid unless it has a valid href, you know, attribute, has a valid URL. Mm-hmm. And so when you use, you know, A href equals pound sign, and you just use that to like trigger something on the page with JavaScript, that's invalid. And API, the accessibility API and assistive technologies, they can't interpret that and parse it correctly. So the correct way to do it is to use a button with an appropriate label that tells the device or the technology what's happening. And they understand this is a button, is triggering an action. And so there is one instance of that in the report. So that's a common problem. Mm-hmm. And then when I talk about like changing default styles, a common problem in the report is that we remove default focus styles, or we remove focus at all. There's one instance where we changed the default cursor to be a different cursor. And mm-hmm. So, you know, if you look at it in the light that these styles are set for a reason, in order to like, so that browsers interpret things correctly, they know what cursor to use and they know, you know, they know when to focus things. Mm-hmm. And then we go in and we decide that we don't like the way that looks or behaves and we want to change it because we like it better for us. We're forgetting that it's not just us, you know, using this web page. It's a variety of users using a variety of browsers and technologies. And when we change these things because we like the way it visually looks, to change it to another visual way, right, then we're interfering with the accessibility, right, of that browser.
Well, and just like any architect in the world, like there are certain things like stairways that have a standard where stairs have to be a certain equal height to one another in relationship to each other. And if your stairs are out of whack, you're going to fail an inspection and they're going to tell you to rip out your staircase. And you're going to have to build a new one. Don't ask me why I know this, but I could tell you that that is true. And so things like anchors, A tags with an href, a hyperlink reference, it is an anchor to a hyperlink that is referencing another web page on the web. It has a semantic purpose in the world. It is a tool that you use to go up a stair to another web page. If you're using that stairway wrong, you're going to have to rip it out and you're going to have to replace it. Like sometimes there are different tools that you should use for different reasons and purposes. Just like I will like use the widgets page in WordPress admin today. The fancy drag and drop like widget UI, the old school one and the old page, not the customizer one, but the old school one, was not accessible. And so you can revert back to a regular old select list, like semantically correctly-ish marked up page that is easier to navigate. No different than like we have ramps to get into places where stairs are just like not accessible. You use a different route. You just completely build a new interface to get in the same doorway. Like there are times where you can kind of use the existing interface to get by. And then there are times where you have to build a completely different one. And so the fact that we have the classic editor, although it's, you know, in this report, there are some issues with the classic editor also. But the fact that we have that as a fallback means we do sort of have a creaky old ramp that someone can use if they have to. If Gutenberg is our block-based stairway to the visual web editing panacea that we're aiming for, then we're on the right track, I guess. But
I got lost in some of those metaphors.
It's okay.
John always has a way with words.
Yeah. So the good thing is that we're on the right track, and that we have a fallback plan. But you're right that like a lot of the markup issues here, these are things we should know by now. Like as a developer myself, and Rachel, maybe you can plead the fifth if you want to, but like some of this stuff's pretty frustrating to read. Like that there are people who get paid to make these mistakes. Right? Like these are simple mistakes. You just don't make these mistakes anymore. Like if you have been programming on the web for any period of time, like using the right markup for the right reason should be like burned into your like just like autonomous process for how you write HTML. It is not, it is weird to me to think that there are professionals who don't really know what tag to use and when. And I get that everyone's at a different place with their education and their learning and all these things. Like I'm not trying to like shame people that are trying real hard to do their best. But like some of this stuff is pretty easy stuff. Well, y'all
like in the report and what Rachel said, I mean this is pretty much the conclusion of what you get. This is what you get with software that puts accessibility, you know, they worry about it later and it's not built. That's not first and foremost a priority. This is what you get.
Mm-hmm. Well, and the accessibility report really treats this like any other one that I've seen. Like the fact that there's remediation guidance is very similar to any other thing that you would see in the world. Like walking paths in like, not necessarily sidewalks, but if you've ever been on a running path or a jogging path that's like a few miles long, there is a maximum incline that they can have between like 100 or 500 feet. Like they can't be so steep that they could cause someone to like to lose control of a bicycle or a stroller or a wheelchair or something else. And so like, but engineers who are contracted to do the work are paid to understand these rules. Like open source software is a little bit different where everyone's contributing all in the middle. And it is kind of up to the momentum of the project to catch these bugs. It isn't up to the budget or the requirements or anything else. It is up to,
hey, if this code works and it solves the problem, hey, let's all celebrate. Hey, it works. Let's go with it.
I mean, the common thing is, hey, it works for me. Right? You know, like,
right.
But that's a whole interesting side conversation. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Ryan. But that's a whole interesting side conversation about how, like, people that build the web, there's not, like, engineers that build sidewalks and stuff, you know, they have certifications and, like, they're required to prove that they, you know, there's not really like certifications for us to prove that we understand HTML5 spec and, mm-hmm. you know, we know when to use a button versus an A and blah, 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 blah. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I think, you know, your example of the walking path, you know, if a stroller wipes out on a walking path, that's a very visible failure and, mm-hmm. you know, Action News is going to cover that and and bring some attention to that. But
you're saying,
you know,
our little podcast here isn't the same as Action News?
Well, I guess
we've been trying to draw.
Can we have an intro song?
I guess what I'm saying is when websites or web applications fail, they fail in a way that's a lot less visible to the world or a lot less visible to the people who made the product. That's an education problem. That's a, you know, we all need to learn and do better. And this isn't a WordPress problem specifically. I was using a different product last week, and I noticed that when I tabbed, nothing happened, and I inspected the element in my browser, and everything was all clickable divs. And that's not how it's supposed to work.
Right.
I found that the other day in a fairly popular WordPress plugin. I was doing an audit for a site running WordPress, and I had never used this plugin before. I just heard about it, and they have bunch of check boxes in the sidebar, like a filter thing. And I went to tab through and I'm like, wait a minute. Like, and then I looked at the markup and it's all divs that are just styled to look like check boxes. And you can click them with a mouse, and then, cause there's probably JavaScript events, you know, tied to them. But yeah, I was like,
like my intro into programming when I was a teenager was Visual Basic 3. And this was before Windows 95 had come out. So I'm totally dating myself, but I used Visual Basic picture boxes, which was like a thing you could just draw in, like, you know, you'd just draw on it like Microsoft Paint. But I used it to like draw Windows 95 looking UI, like draggable toolbars and hover over buttons. Like I spent a ton of time like learning how to draw into this picture box to create my own UI, because Visual Basic 3 UI was so big and like the buttons were like hugely beveled and kind of ugly looking. And then once I actually got all of it working, like one, I learned a lot, but two, it was like completely not accessible with a keyboard at all, because I hadn't even considered what that had meant. You know, like I was making it pretty for a mouse, and the keyboard part of it had never even crossed my mind as like a 12-year-old kid trying to learn how to code and draw stuff in Visual Basic. But like, this feels a lot like that to me. It feels like people just using divs because they're big blocky things and they know how to make a div do what it needs to do, and then just kind of forgetting about it though. Like, you know, me tinkering around with it and learning, you know, in my parents' basement is different than like launching something that people are actually supposed to try and use out in the world. Like, it's just such a different thing.
Yeah, I think we have a common problem in the fact that, like, you think about a lot of people that build websites, like, taught themselves, and whether that was like what level of formality that was, and you learned how to do something until it worked, and mm-hmm. then you moved on. You know, like you didn't learn to understand, you like learned just to like set it up and move on. And mm-hmm. we've all done that, like, you know, mm-hmm. there's been various levels even in my past of like, oh, I just figured that out and I moved on, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I do think we kind of have to get back to or get to, if we ever were there, a point where, you know, we are learning to understand how the web works, like how browsers parse and understand how APIs, mm-hmm. accessibility APIs work, and assistive technology, and understanding the document object model and all these things. And the more we can understand that, is the more we start to see the bigger picture. We're learning like why we use certain elements when we use them versus, you know, using divs that solve all problems, mm-hmm. You know, stuff like that. There's definitely that issue. And you know, people, especially since there's a lot of flexibility in the web, you can obviously use these various elements to kind of do whatever you want half the time, as long as you can put some CSS on it and make it look like checkboxes. So you can obviously do these things, but, you know, drawing that line and making sure people see why they shouldn't do it and is a whole other matter that involves, you know, education and advocacy and things like that. And education about building websites is another problem. You know, there's just not a lot of standards there. It hasn't, you know, it's barely taught in colleges yet and things like that. So, you know, I remember it's been a while since I've talked to anybody about it, but the idea of like colleges, a lot of times they don't offer these web programs because generally the way that universities work is that it takes like years to approve curriculum. And by the time they've approved it, like the web's already changed and they have to change all the curriculum. Right. And so, I've had that conversation a lot, but it's a large scale issue that's going to take some time.
And it is important. Like one of the things that WordPress has always been good about and kind of been built on is the relatively low barrier to entry and the high level of mastery. And so, like, if the barrier to entry really is comprehending web accessibility and UX and UI and all these things, then it's just too high for anyone to really enjoy coming into it. So, like, how do you balance? How do you let someone in? But then kind of not scare them away when you see a very long runway ahead of them of things that they have to educate themselves on. You know, it's an interesting kind of set of challenges that we've got.
I think step one, just to sort of bring things full circle, is making sure that the code that WordPress is built on itself is a good example. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'm, I do not have a degree in anything connected to my job. I'm one of the many people in the WordPress world who got into this because I was a tinkerer, and then my tinkering turned into some knowledge that I was able to turn into a profession. But, you know, I think what you look for as you're tinkering is you look for good examples that you can follow, and the extent to which the WordPress project itself can be that good example, I think, is a good starting point.
So what do you guys think is like the, I'm sorry, maybe my question, maybe you're about to answer my question, but my question is like, how do you have recommendations or opinions on what the future is of solving these problems? I know that people say that, you know, web accessibility shouldn't be something that you just bolt on at the end. But at the same time, you can't expect for everyone to know it 100%. And so, yeah, we are all supporting each other and trying our best and doing as good as we can at the time. But do you have any thoughts, suggestions on what we're supposed to do next?
So we do have, you know, we do have a standard that we set as far as like WordPress has to be WCAG 2.0 AA. But the problem is that we don't have any enforcement of that standard. And so we have to set boundaries. And this is kind of related to what I was going to add on to like what John was saying a minute ago about like, yeah, if we say you've got to do all the accessibility stuff, then there's a huge runway for people to get involved. But I do think we have to find a happy middle ground between, you know, it's, I think that doesn't mean that we shouldn't have a runway. Like we need to see the value in having some standards, and nothing wrong with having a barrier to entry if it means that the end result is a higher quality, more usable, you know, web WordPress admin and experience and overall, you know, ecosystem. And so like, so basically we should, like Brian's suggestion would be step one, education. We can provide more education, whether it's in the form of, you know, more extensive handbooks and things like this, checklists to give people things like this that they can walk through when they're building something, check these boxes. That's something. It's a small step, but it's something. Anything at this point is helpful. But ultimately, holding ourselves accountable, having some more governance involved when we do core releases that says, you know, we have to meet this standard. So we ran these tests, and this thing you built, while you think it's done, didn't pass our test. So it's not going out. Mm-hmm. Like, we have to draw that line. Like, we can't base our releases off of, you know, timelines. We need to base our releases off of, you know, making sure that our standards are met. You know, I'm obviously like, stuff like security is a whole other ballpark, but I'm talking about, you know, like, we don't release Gutenberg until it meets WCAG 2.0, mm-hmm. and we are doubly sure of that. You know, like, setting that example, like not just for our ecosystem, but for the entire web community and people that build websites in general, mm-hmm. is a huge step forward.
You bring up kind of an interesting point, because like, I know recently, and I bring up the sidewalk issue a lot, because in Wisconsin, some place had put in, they just spent a few million dollars on a bunch of curb and gutters, only to have to redo all of them because the diagonal yellow opening had to be from 4 feet to 5 feet wide. Like, the minimum was a foot larger. And then they had to put those little yellow mats down, or like to have the yellow, like concrete had to be stamped with the little bumps.
Little dots, the bumps, yep.
And those were like had to be there. And so, Rachel, you bring up the idea of like, you know, enforcement. Well, the way that like the sidewalk problem gets enforced is that the federal government comes by and says, well, if you don't do this, we are going to pull funding on all of the other things that we are already funding or that you need. And so you need to come up with the rest of this money to make this accessible if you want to continue to receive the other benefits that you've been getting from us for schools or your railroads or your infrastructure or whatever else. Like, in the real world, there are consequences for not having things be up to the current standard when it comes to accessibility. And you're right to think that we really don't have any real consequences. I mean, not like I feel personally like the consequence of just knowing that you didn't do it seems pretty much seems enough for me. Like if someone sees something I built and goes like, this is not nearly as accessible as it should be, for me, my response is going to be like, holy crap, you're right, I need to fix this immediately, I'm really sorry. But like, if the consequence is just nothing, it's like, well, I'm done. And you kind of just get to move on to the next thing. There should be something, and that's where like it makes me wonder, like, is the best we can do to have there be a process where our accessibility team, or where the audit of everything that happens does get tacked on at the end, or maybe is in the middle, but at the end there needs to be some kind of sign off that says that this passes or fails, and if it fails, it doesn't ship. Like, if that is the consequence, then at least there's something. Because without anything, this
sounds like a new business model for web host, where for other client sites that are not accessible or meet a certain requirement of accessibility, they fine them.
Well, and the thing that like
cha-ching, baby.
The thing that I'm reminded of with Gutenberg, and I think we've talked about it on the show, maybe with Morton, but like not to be like too philosophical about things like this, but I'm also impressed at how, like, you know, WordPress 10 or 13 years ago was not as good as it is now, but you can still see a lot of WordPress's skeletal structure when you're looking at its beautiful skin today. I mean, the foundation is still there. And so a lot of the reason WordPress, I think, I credit the community quite a bit for making WordPress as successful as it is, because we saw the not what it was, but what it could be, like the potential for it to be great, and for the community at large to make it better. And when I see the audit that y'all have put together here, I see a little bit more of that, like a for real generation two of like new WordPress developers that can come in and see the potential in something great, knowing that it's not as good as it should be. And that it will take a number of years to bring it up to par, but that it is kind of a Phoenix rising moment for WordPress again, where we've taken something and we've kind of made something that's not so good. We have the opportunity then to create jobs, to create professions, to build on the economy of Gutenberg, to kind of to improve it over time, and that. Lots of good things can come from something bad. It kind of reminds me of that a little bit again. I think it's like Automattic does a good job of like coming in and saving the day sometimes with stuff like this. So I think my hat kind of goes off to them also, and also to like all of the people who threw in their own money to try and bankroll this. I think is they're like the unsung heroes of making this happen. But it's really great. Like, this needs to happen. The time was sort of now for this. And I think it's awesome that the both of you took the initiative to just, you know, take the hit and do all the hard work and heavy lifting for this, because without you, it wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I like how they said, well, if they're not going to do it, we'll do it. You know, and the community, once again, stepped up and did what needed to be done. Just a few more questions here, and then we'll wrap it up. First, has Matt Mulloway got in touch with either of you or shared any feedback based on the report yet? And B, what has been the general response from the community or those who have seen your report? Even I know it's been shared in the WordPress accessibility Slack channel. What has the response been like from there, from them?
So, we haven't heard from Matt. And B, from what I've seen, it's been fairly positive. It's been pretty exciting to watch a few of the different Slack channels, those being accessibility, the design team, and the core editors of the Gutenberg team. They've been chatting about it a lot. Like, I think within like an hour of it being released, they had gone in, found all the issues that Tenon had submitted, labeled them, and put them into like a GitHub project or something, and just kind of started like attacking them. And so, they started having like ad hoc triage meetings to like look at them, to have discussions. This morning, it was a core editor channel, Brian, I think, was having
a core editor was having a meeting.
Yeah, they had a meeting this morning and they were talking about it and about how they want to put a lot of focus on accessibility for a future release, and they want to get other teams involved. And so it's been really exciting to watch the reaction so far. From my viewpoint, it's been fairly positive. There's been a lot of people talking about it online, and even, I kind of had like a tweet storm over the weekend, and most of the people that interacted with the tweet or retweeted or talked about it actually like weren't WordPress people. And so it was really interesting in that sense that I think we're kind of helping spread the education even now beyond our project to affect other projects. So so far I've been really happy with the response, you know, because of the aforementioned, you know, discussions we had earlier about, you know, what the community was like in the fall when a lot of us were frustrated and there were lots of tension going around. You know, we didn't know what to expect when people saw the report, because it was going to say that it's inaccessible, that it was, as John said earlier, quite scathing. And so there definitely were concerns, but so far I think everyone's looking at the positive side, looking at this more as a way to move forward and as opposed to kind of living in the past about it.
I wonder how many people on the accessibility team reviewed the report and yelled, "Hallelujah, this is what I've been trying to say. This is what I've been telling you." And now we got this report, and by the way, we've learned since the release of Gutenberg that there have been admissions that have come out that said there was a major communication breakdown between the accessibility team and the people who were working on Gutenberg, and that they were going to try and make amends to try and get members of the accessibility team more involved in future projects or future major changes in WordPress to try and get everybody on the same page. And there's been a lot of changes as of late to try and get everybody on the same page in the WordPress project. So before we wrap it up here, and I know that we're not supposed to use certain bits of quotes or anything for fodder, but to me, this is.
But I'm going to do it anyway.
But I'm going to do it anyway. That's what I do. And but in the executive summary near the end, I want to read this quote, and we can talk about it. It says, "Gutenberg has significant and pervasive accessibility problems, the likes of which to amount to a step backwards for users with disabilities over the legacy editor. Our user-based testing backed by data from our technical review indicates that the accessibility problems are severe in nature. We feel concerned that Gutenberg's current accessibility issues will prove problematic for website owners who deploy Gutenberg to content creators in protected populations, or for website owners who are themselves part of a protected population. Therefore, organizations which have high-risk profiles should consult legal counsel before using it and may want to choose to use the legacy editor instead." And boy, that made my eyes go big.
They don't play around. I mean, they laid it all out on the table there at the end, which is what they should do.
Mm-hmm. All right. So we paid them for a frank and honest assessment.
Yeah.
So they have. So where does and I guess the team has sort of moved on, but where do we go from here? Where do people go from here? I mean, if people are listening to this and they're in a higher education environment and they're still on the brink of implementing Gutenberg or upgrading to WordPress 5.0 in their environment, I guess obviously heed the advice of Tenon here. Maybe seek legal counsel, as each situation is probably. Has its own unique variables, but where do we go from here?
I'll let Brian speak.
All right, sure. So speaking as somebody working at an institution of higher education, where we're going is my team is working with our accessibility office to decide what circumstances it's okay to use the editor and what circumstances it's not. Where we want to use the classic editor as sort of the legacy fallback, and where we want to use the new editor as a pilot. Because as far as we're concerned, Gutenberg is still the future of WordPress. There's no like ostrich head in the sand moment for us. There's a lot that you can do with it. It's still really exciting. but also we want to be careful about how we roll it out to our campus. I think in the higher ed world, I think a lot of people are going to end up in the similar places where they're going to sort of cautiously stick some toes into the water, learn enough about the new editor, learn how to build blocks, things like that, to be prepared for a wider rollout, and then keep an eye on how things progress from here. I think there's a lot of reason for optimism, but you know, we just have to sort of keep an eye on what comes in WordPress 5.3 and 5.4 and so on.
Yeah, hey Gutenberg changelog, we got our eyes on you. We're looking for those accessibility improvements.
Basically, yeah.
Yeah, pretty much. And the same, I would recommend the same even if you're not in higher ed. And accessibility, there are a lot of civil cases happening with lawsuits. So just because you're not Section 508 does not mean that someone can't sue you with a civil case for inaccessibility. So a scenario where this might happen is if you are requiring someone to use Gutenberg to do their job and it's inaccessible, then they have a good case to come to you or to sue you for inaccessibility in the workplace. So be on the lookout for that if you do have a protected population in your employment. That I would be cautious and speak with a lawyer before using it. But if you are, for anyone kind of else in the community that's listening and wants to get involved, what we've been recommending people do is join those WordPress Slack teams. So join the design team or join the Gutenberg team or the accessibility team and ask them how to help. And that might be, they might give you some GitHub issues to look at and try to remediate. They might give you some other tasks to do, but they're the ones that are kind of organizing the remediation and planning it all. So we recommend everyone kind of go to them to find out how you can help.
Mm-hmm.
And so go ahead, Brian.
I'll just add that there's a lot of knowledge and expertise on the WordPress accessibility team. Tenon was testing on 5.0.3, we just had 5.2 released, and some of the issues that Tenon found have already been fixed just by the work of the accessibility team working with the editor team over the last few months. I think there's a lot of value in the audit that we organized, but it's important to remember that there are a lot of really smart and talented people in our community who can help guide this moving forward as well.
So in a perfect world, my CMS would be accessible, the code it generates would be accessible, the editor would be accessible, my theme would be accessible, the plugins I install, all of them would be accessible. Hey, but that's a perfect world. We're in reality. And I wonder how close we can get to that perfect world with WordPress. But you know, with the plugins and all these different parts and pieces in the wild west of coding, it's just gonna be a nonstop educational process.
That's the thing that bothers me about all of this the most, is that like the problems that this audit revealed and that like Gutenberg itself or like React components themselves tended to expose is that operating systems and web browsers have done an extremely poor job of providing native versions of modern UI elements and components. Like we are still living in a world where you have links, buttons, select boxes, inputs, and text areas. Like everything else, you have to invent. You have to invent tabs. You have to invent menus. You have to invent accordions. You have to invent all of these UI elements. And like the operating systems, Mac OS, Windows, Linux, they don't give you an easy ribbon UI that comes with built-in accessibility for the web. It doesn't exist. And so it shouldn't be a surprise to anyone that anytime you have to rebuild that thing, it's always going to be worse than if it was provided to you by the operating system itself. Like you can't be expected to reinvent all these things. And so like the future of web components in theory is supposed to help with some of that, but it only helps if we actually have engineers that build those things to spec in a way that makes them all accessible again. And so it really is, we are years away from that ever being achieved. And so for the meantime, we really are on our own. It is the Wild West, like you said, Jeff. We have to do as good as we can on our own, because the things that keep us safe in the computer world, our operating systems and our browsers, aren't providing us with the native tools to make these kind of complex UIs even possible at all.
Well, hopefully through this audit and through all the issues, we can get all the issues taken care of, which would provide a much better foundation for people building on top of this platform mm-hmm. into the future. It'd be a lot more accessible.
Yep. Even things like title tags that your browser knows to make a tooltip, we don't even use them anymore. You know, like we try to avoid using a title tag for things or where they're going to be overlapping text. Like we've kind of taken all of the things that we've been given and abandoned them and created our own rules to try and improve things without really knowing whether we have, and kind of seeming like we haven't.
We're going to wrap it up here, but you're totally referencing, and we've been talking about this before, but you mentioned in an earlier episode about an article you read that pretty much said, hey, you know, this web that we've been trying to build, well, all we've done is destroy it. We've made it worse.
Right.
Right. Maybe you can link back that article. But Brian and Rachel, I want to thank you both very much for spending some of your time on the day here. this accessibility audit, you're doing the rounds, you know, in the media. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you're on all the different networks, you know, throughout the week. So I'm very gracious for you two being on the show today. And thanks again for this huge service that you've done for the community with this accessibility audit. It's an enormous educational opportunity for so many people out there. And Brian, where can people keep tabs with you? And then we'll go to Rachel.
Yeah. So I tweet periodically at Brian, Brian Deconic, Deconinck. The second N is silent. Play with people. I make the rounds at WordCamps, and we'll be at WP Campus in Portland, Oregon this summer, and I'll let Rachel talk about that.
Well, you can find me on all the internets at Bama Designer, even though I don't live in Alabama right now, and BamaDesigner.com, and of course WP Campus. If you want to join us, it's really easy. We have a Get Involved form on our site. We're mostly active in Slack, so come join us, talk about the audit, talk about higher ed, talk about whatever you like. We do have the webinar on Monday. We hope you can join us 12 p.m. Central Time and join us. Tenon's going to talk about the audit, but also it's an opportunity for Q&A. So if you have any questions about the audit and you want something clarified or you want to understand something better, it's a great chance. There's going to be live captioning, and we are going to provide a recording afterwards. And then we have our WP Campus this summer, as Brian mentioned, in Portland. We just closed our call for speakers, but we hope you'll join us. It's a lot of fun.
This is the in-person physical event, correct?
Yes, yes. And this year, something's fun that's going to happen is we have on-campus lodging in one of the dorms, so you can come and pretend you're in college.
Oh, that would be cool.
Pretend like you're in college again.
That's pretty awesome, actually. That's really cool.
We're excited about that. And so someone found out today that apparently there's a pool people can use. Like, everyone's getting into it. It's tons of fun.
We create a WordPress sorority in that weekend.
Baby campus for Greek system by the end of the weekend. But thanks for having us. It was tons of fun. It was an honor to do the audit. Brian and I had a blast, and you know, it was a lot of work, but it was worth every minute. We learned a lot and had fun, and Brian's always great to work on stuff with, so grateful for him and everybody else that took part.
If we're honest, Tenon probably did a little more work.
Tenon did, yeah. But this is true, but you know.
Well, again, thank you two for being on the show today. I think we've learned a lot, and enjoy the rest of your day. And I can't wait. I'm trying to tune into that Tenon webinar this Monday.
Yeah, we got numbers. They sent us some numbers earlier. I think about over 150 people have registered so far. So
I'll be 151.
There you go.
That's really cool.
I'll be there. All right, you folks, enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
All right. Bye, y'all. Bye. Thanks.
All right, there you have it. So you got Brian the Conic and Rachel Cherry, and we just covered the accessibility audit. And of course, we'll have links to the audit in the show notes and the various reports. It is a doozy of an audit.
Awesome. Incredible.
It's pretty incredible. And like I said, my favorite part is the technical document where they actually explain what the issue is. They provide illustrations and then remediation techniques, which I think, you know, that part alone could be, is worth its weight in gold in terms of educational opportunities throughout the WordPress community, whether it's at a meetup, WordCamp, or what have you. So, I mean,
I agree.
It's just really awesome what they were able to pull off and make this audit a reality.
Well, if you're going to tell someone what's wrong, you have to show them what's right. I mean, that's the easiest way to get to solve the problem. You know, you might not
works
be perfect,
for me.
But right. I mean, works for everyone, you know, like that's how, I mean, really open source is built. If you find a bug in something, you have to tell them what's wrong. And then it doesn't hurt to try and submit a patch or put a screenshot up to show what it is that you think is right. Like it's the same thing that happens out in the world with any of these kind of audits, if it's financial or physical or otherwise. Like, here's what we found that's not correct. Here's what you should probably do to fix it. And we'll see you next time. Like, it's exactly what I would expect from an audit like this. It's really good.
So we're going to wrap it up here on this week's show. By the way, if for those not watching, if you don't watch the video, there is such a cozy fireplace behind John, behind his left shoulder. Mm-hmm. And I just like, I'm looking at his screen and I picture him in flannel. I picture him, he's drinking hot cocoa. And he's telling me a story of Gutenberg. Like, 'twas the night of Gutenberg right there in front of that fire, even though we're almost in the summertime. So
it's 45 degrees here and raining and windy. So the fireplace is full effect.
Anyways, that's what you're missing out on if you're not watching the show. Again, next week I'll dive into sort of the future of what I'm doing and what I've been up to. I'm not dead. You know, some people thought I may have passed away. I'm not. I'm still here.
Happy you're still here, John.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So that's going to do it for today's episode of WordPress Weekly. You can find show notes for this episode and all other episodes on wptavern.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Jeffro, JeffrO. And John?
Follow me on Twitter, where I've tried to delete most of my tweets and occasionally will tweet some obscure video game reference if something that I thought was funny that nobody else probably does. Or jjj.blog, where I actually have a couple of blog posts about trying to set up a Raspberry Pi swarm and self-host all of our websites on some Dockerized Raspberry Pis in my basement. So there's some stuff coming there. I'm actually going to start using my blog to publish stuff. So stay tuned.
I wonder how good of a Def Leppard song that'd be if we just switched out the lyrics. So he says, "Sweet Raspberry Pi." Nah, I like cherry. Cherry pie is better. Can't change cherry.
I like raspberries. I'm fine with it. We could figure out a way to make it work.
Sweet raspberry. Yeah, see, there's two words. Cherry's just one word.
A lot of syllables. And now you're shouting syllables at the end of the show.
Yeah, I shouldn't do that. All right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your week. We'll talk to you again next Wednesday afternoon. Say bye, John.
Bye, John. Bye, everybody.